You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. It's a challenge to balance human development on the one hand with the preservation of species on the other. This is the sound of the California condor, a severely endangered bird and one of the oldest and largest in North America. The process of trying to protect and now regenerate the condor population began in the early 1900s. Since then, government agencies have spent $20 million on the conservation effort, making it the most expensive in U.S. history. The condor has become a national symbol of the movement to protect endangered animals. It's the first species listed on the Endangered Animals Act of 1973, and it tends to inspire dramatic statements, like this one from journalist John Nielsen, as read by KALW's Seth Samuel.
The California condor is the Elvis Presley of endangered species. It is huge. It is iconic. It is worshipped and despised. It is beautiful and hideously ugly. It does a wicked mating dance and eats colossal meats. And it's not really dead. The condor is the soul of the wilderness. The condor is smarter than you think. The condor is a rat with 10-foot wings and the enemy of progress. It's a bird whose sad demise and incomplete recovery is a preview of the future facing lions, tigers, bears, and other charismatic species.
The condor population became threatened in part because of poaching and egg collecting. That's been outlawed, but other problems plague them today. That's what KALW's Alyssa Kapnick found out at the Oakland Zoo's Condor Rehabilitation Center.
So we're passing lions right now. And we're coming up on our aviary right here.
Nikki Mora is leading me through the Oakland Zoo. She's the marketing and PR manager here, and she has special access to a hidden part of this animal world.
I don't know how muddy it's going to be down here. We're going to go down this path.
We head behind the zebra exhibit and beyond the elephant barns.
Oh, they have the little sign up. That's kind of cool.
And finally, we've reached our destination. A giant empty cage hidden away from zoo visitors, out of earshot and out of sight.
They put up this mesh right here so that it's kind of a sound barrier and sight barrier outside of the facility so that the birds don't get scared and they're just kind of in their own environment back here.
The cage is about 20 feet square and 10 feet tall, built for the big birds who will eventually land here. This is the newest site of the California Condor Recovery Program. But there aren't any condors here yet.
Obviously, we never want to have them here because that means they're sick.
This is Dr. Andrea Goodnight, the associate veterinarian at the zoo. She's been studying condors for years and feels a personal investment in preserving them.
I can tell you the first time that you see a condor in the wild is just a magical experience.
The way she describes it, when the California condor takes flight, it flaps its wings once and then just rides the wind currents for hours at a time. The birds can fly 150 miles at a stretch and as high as 15,000 feet in the air.
I can recount when I was in Pinnacles National Monument hiking with my husband, and I was condor spotting because I knew that they were supposed to be there, and I kept looking. I'd look up and see a big bird, and we'd both point, oh, no, it's a vulture. Oh, it's another turkey vulture. Oh, it's a turkey vulture. And then you see this thing that makes this big shadow come over, and you point, and it's like, oh, that's a condor. And there's just nothing like it.
It's a beauty humans have long wanted to capture. Museum collectors used to kill condors for their displays. And it's no wonder. The bird is magnificent. A wingspan of nearly 10 feet and a shock of red skin on its skull. Condors were also hunted for food and their eggs stolen by egg collectors. In the first half of the 20th century, the federal government started trying to preserve the birds. But by the early 1980s, there were only about a dozen wild condors left. By this point, scientists had been studying the bird for years. They acted quickly, by literally going out and collecting every single bird they could find, and bringing them to breeding sites at the San Diego Wild Animal Park and the Los Angeles Zoo. They found and captured the last known wild condor, whom they called Igor, on Easter Sunday, 1987.
Luckily, these scientists were able to figure out how to breed the birds in captivity, how to release them, how to get them successfully back out in the wild.
Biologists began releasing the condors just 5 years after they'd collected them all. They've continued to breed them, and now, 2 decades later, there are 226 wild California condors. But the birds still aren't totally out of the woods, so to speak. It's illegal to hunt them now, but hunters are still a danger. The condors are scavengers, which means they don't often kill their own food, but rely on eating animals that have already died.
And so what is happening to the birds now is that they are eating carcasses that they find out in the wild that have been shot by hunters or ranchers or poachers at times as well.
Nowadays, the carcasses the condors eat are often animals that were shot and killed by lead bullets. This means that the meat has lead poisoning. And when the condors eat that meat, they get lead poisoning. Death by lead is slow and painful. Lead-poisoned condors have trouble flying and walking and can't protect themselves. They fall off cliffs or starve to death. The problems become so severe that scientists now go out regularly to test the wild condors' blood levels and take them back for treatment if their levels are high. Which brings us back to the Oakland Zoo.
What we do is basically give them a drug that helps pull the blood, lead out of the blood, and then they are able to excrete it through their kidneys.
The process Dr. Goodnight is describing is called chelation. It can take from a week to long months. During that time, the scientists want to make sure that the birds don't get too used to humans so that they'll be ready for release back into the wild as soon as they're cured. This means taking some extreme measures.
Here you can kind of see there's 2 holding areas, so we could actually treat 2 sick condors down here.
This is Nikki Mora again.
I would say each side of the holding facility is probably as large of a small living room or sitting area that one might have in their home.
A sitting area with chain link fence walls and no insulation.
In the wild, the birds would not have a heated environment, so they don't want them to get used to special cozy environments.
When the birds arrive, the scientists and vets will be able to monitor them by video 24 hours a day. The zookeepers want as little contact with the birds as possible, so the zoo has designed some special systems.
There's actually a chute. See that chute right there? That's where they're going to feed the birds.
Moore is pointing to a big black tube sticking out of the cement wall and into the pen. The zookeepers will feed the condors through the chute so that the birds won't think that the food is coming from humans and won't, therefore, become reliant on humans for food. In theory, this will all work perfectly. The condors will get better, they'll be released, and they'll live their lives in the wild. But scientists at other condor rehab centers have already discovered another problem. Once they're released, the birds go right back to finding and eating lead-tainted meat. They're still getting sick. So biologists are trying yet another intervention. Here's Dr. Goodnight again.
The biologists are literally dragging cow carcasses up there, these calves that they get from dairies, stillborn calves. They take them up there. They know that they're non-tainted. They know they don't have any lead in them. And so they supplementally feed the birds. And obviously, this can't continue forever. It's not a self-sustaining population that way.
It's easy to see why scientists thought it was the obvious choice to remove all condors from the wild and bring them in for breeding. Otherwise, they'd disappear forever. It's harder to determine how much and for how long the birds have been changed by human contact. In an open letter from September of 1980, David Brower, founder of the Sierra Club Foundation, wrote the following.
A condor is only 5% feathers, flesh, blood, and bone. The rest is place. Condors are a soaring manifestation of the place that built them and coded their genes. That place requires space to meet in, to teach fledglings to roost unmolested, to bathe and drink in, to find other condors in and not biologists, and to fly over wild and free.
The Oakland Zoo expects to be fully prepared for sick California condors come early spring, but they're definitely not hoping for them. they're hoping the birds stay out in the wild, where they're meant to be. In Oakland, I'm Melissa Kapnick for Cross Currents.